Nacho Land Podcast with David Amoyala.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the second episode of the week of the Calcio Land podcast. So today we have actually a really cool episode for you. We're recording this on Wednesday night, so we're going to preview the Serie A weekend with our friend Thousand Names with some game picks. We have two excellent first-time guests. We had Mark Doyle from Goal.com. He is based in Italy. We had an awesome chat about some big storylines in Serie A. As usual, we have some great Twitter questions from our listeners. We have a bonus Q&A for our patrons. A lot of really good questions there as well. If you dig the content of the podcast, I have a feeling you'd like the patron stuff. We have longer versions of the podcast. And a lot of articles, which are now focused a lot more on the transfer window. I am going to write one about Dybala tonight and probably post it tomorrow. And we are closing the podcast with a really nice surprise. Former Liverpool goalkeeper legend Bruce Grobelaar came on to talk a little bit about Liverpool's summer tour. But that was an excuse for me to ask him a bunch of questions on Liverpool's great win. But before we get to all that, I am joined by our great friend, the producer, co-host of the podcast, Alex Goldberg. His own podcast is absolutely blowing up on Patreon. I cannot recommend it enough. So, Alex, I want to start here. This was a big storyline on Monday when everything that happened feels like a century ago, but I feel there are some pretty interesting talking points. So I'm sure since you're plugged into the Chelsea stratosphere and you follow Serie A closely because of the podcast, you are aware of the incident between Gattuso and Bakayoko, with Bakayoko essentially refusing to enter the pitch during the match against Milan. So I want to get your take on that. And we've also seen a somewhat similar incident on your team, Alex, Chelsea, between Sarri and the goalkeeper. So give me your take on this incident and how you would compare it on what happened at Chelsea earlier this season.
Yeah, I mean, I got to be honest, not a great season for Chelsea players and following instructions and being good professionals. Really not. That Kepa incident was very interesting. Really had never seen anything like it before. Many people had said that who've been watching the game way longer than I have. Kepa just flat out refusing to come off. But the reason why I feel this is a little bit different, but arguably worse, David, from Bakayoko, is because Bakayoko wasn't in the game. Bakayoko clearly was not showing much will to warm up or really have any urgency to get in the game. And just what then transpired with Bakayoko clearly mouthing some naughty words, and fine, I don't really care what Gattuso said. The same standard for a player and a manager, it's not the same standard. So Bakayoko, to me here, looks pretty bad. Looks pretty bad because you got to get in that game. Anytime you're asked to warm up, you do it 110%. And then if your manager has any type of reservations about how you warmed up or didn't like how you did it, and then maybe he mouths something to you that's not great, you don't respond with the same thing or saying F off, man. I mean, not good. And I know Bakayoko already earlier in the week, I guess, was an hour late to training. This is just not a great look. And the reason why I say Kepa's incident is actually not as bad is Kepa, at least, David, at least Kepa wanted to stay out there because originally it looked like he was injured. So then Maurizio Sarri started warming up Willy Caballero. And penalties were looming in that game. So on an injury front and maybe on a penalty front, Sarri wanted to get Kepa out. But Kepa originally was just like, no, I'm okay. I'm fine. You know, I'm healthy. And they couldn't talk to each other, really. They were from far away. And Kepa, at the end of the day, it was too much. But Kepa, I at least chalked up to being a warrior and wanting to play. He took it too far, but he wanted to play. Bakayoko, in this instance, doesn't really look like he wanted to play and doesn't really look like he wanted to be a warrior. So that's why, in my opinion, this is even worse from Bakayoko. And it's crazy how everything was going so well with Bakayoko not too long ago. And all of a sudden, it's just going very, very downhill. So, yeah, I was not too thrilled there with Bakayoko. And, David, it has me really not wanting him back in Chelsea at this point. I was on the fence about it, but I don't need players that act like that. I just don't. Chelsea doesn't. So, David, that was my reaction. What about you?
Yeah, you know how we debuted our new catchphrase a while ago that, you know, are we a two-game losing streak from sounding like idiots with this take? It's unbelievable how much things have changed with Bakayoko because, you know, even with the Acerbi-Kessi situation with the jersey, which definitely wasn't a good look on his part, but you really felt like finally here's a top player, and he has played as a top player in Serie A this season, who's really embracing being at Milan. We certainly didn't see that with Bonucci. We didn't see it with Higuain. And this is someone who really seemed to love playing for Milan, had bonded with the fans. The fans had a chant for him. I mean, it really seemed that, you know, it was meant to be long term. And in a lot of ways, you know, his demise recently is kind of really summarizes what's happened at Milan since the derby. So real shame because I was really very impressed with, you know, Bakayoko at Milan. And I felt finally, at least there's finally un giocatore da Milan, as we would say in Italy, a player worthy of Milan when Milan was really good. But it really took a turn for the worst. I think, you know, the only silver lining out of this is like at least Gattuso ended up looking really good here. He's had a really tough stretch. You know, he handled it very well with the media. Look, he's not going to come back as Milan's coach next season, but at least to me, you know, that's going to be one way on his way out that fans are going to be able to latch on something positive to it. So I felt at least Gattuso did save some face here with the way this whole situation was handled.
Very interesting. So, David, this is kind of an inevitable question. Bakayoko's future is kind of all of a sudden up in the air. Where do you see Bakayoko going this summer?
So, Alex, we're recording this on Wednesday. As I'm sure you've talked a lot about, seen a lot of tweets, the transfer ban for Chelsea for now has been upheld. I'm sure they're going to appeal it again. You know, I did a little bit of research. As far as I can tell, the ban say it holds. It wouldn't impact Chelsea's ability to bring back Bakayoko. It also wouldn't impact their ability to keep redeeming him, extending the loan. But as you mentioned, you know, maybe there's not so much appetite for Bakayoko at Chelsea. A couple of factors. A, to me, it seems like everything's pointing to Sarri staying, and we're going to talk about it later on in the show and the questions. I want to get your take on that. And to me, if Sarri stays in his system, I know it might seem a little counterintuitive. I see Bakayoko as really playing the Jorginho role. The reason I say that is that Milan, him and Biglia have been kind of mutually exclusive when maybe on the surface it would look like maybe it's more Bakayoko and Kessi. So I'm not sure how much appetite Sarri would have for him. As far as I know, even before the latest incident, Bakayoko's agents already been fielding offers from other clubs for Bakayoko. It's not out of the question that we see a comparable scenario like Cancelo with Juve last year. Inter had the option to buy Cancelo outright, didn't end up doing, but he ended up staying in Italy. Who knows if Juve maybe tries to do that again? They certainly could use a midfielder like Bakayoko. Also, you have to wonder if Bakayoko wants to stay in Italy altogether after everything he's been through. So even with the transfer ban, that aside, if it stays or not, Chelsea needing a player, I don't really think there's a lot of appetite on for any party for him going back there. My guess is he's going to end up being sold to another team. That is how I see this playing out in the end. I think a team is going to think that it's worth the risk with Bakayoko because of what he showed for Milan, what he had shown at Monaco, and then maybe they can chalk it up to the fact there has been a lot of dysfunction at Milan recently. I'm sure there's a manager who thinks he can get the most out of him.
Yeah, it's going to be very, very interesting. The Jorginho role, the backup to Jorginho, not a horrible shout considering I don't want Mateo Kovacic to stay at Chelsea, and I guess Bakayoko could then be the backup to Jorginho, but nah, a team that has too much toxicity does not need Bakayoko. But I think you're spot on. I think because of what he showed in the middle of the season, someone's going to want to take the gamble. All right, David, we are always willing to take the gamble on game picks with you and Thousand Names. So let's look ahead to the weekend in Serie A. Who do we have from you and Thousand?
Yeah, so 1,000 names. By now, you guys know the drill. We're going to pick three matches for the upcoming Serie A weekend. First one, somewhat important. Roma still in the mix for the Champions League spot. We have Juve traveling to the Olimpico. 1,000 has Roma winning 1-0. Goal by Pastore. Ronaldo sbaglia rigore. He says Ranieri is going to really embarrass Acciuga, which is Allegri's nickname, and he's going to make the Colosseum be very emotional because of the win. And he says that Marotta, Inter's director, is going to end up getting Conte under Agnelli and Pallotta's noses. There's a lot going on with Conte and Allegri, we'll get to later in the show. In Italian, Roma Juve 1-0, Pastore, Ronaldo sbaglia rigore, Ranieri decanta da Acciuga, fa commuovere il Colosseo. Marotta, Sofia, Conte, Allegri e Pallotta. I'm going to agree. I think Roma's going to win. They do have more, but Juve has absolutely nothing to play with. I'm going to go 1-0, but I'm going to give a goal to Zaniolo, who could use a little boost at the end of the season. Next match, Milan, like Roma, still somewhat in the race for a Champions League spot. They travel to Tuscany to face Fiorentina. 1,000 has Milan winning 2-0. Borini, Kessi. He says Gattuso is going to embarrass Montella as well. Seems pretty much everyone else has. And he says Montella's really an indecent manager, but that Milan is going to win thanks to robbery help from the referees. In Italian, Fiorentina, Milan 0-2, Borini, Kessi. Montella preso schiaffi anche da Gattuso, allenatore francamente indecente. Milan avanti con i furti. I'm going to go with a draw here. I think Fiorentina's been absolutely dreadful, but I think they want to end the season somewhat decently. I liked a little bit of what I saw from Milan, but I still don't trust them. I'm going to go 1-1. I'm going to have Piontek scoring again, and I'll give a goal to Muriel. Last match, very important, another one in the race to avoid in a race for the Champions League and race for avoid relegation. We have Genoa playing Atalanta. So is going to be played on a neutral field. 1,000 has it as 0-0. Says Papu Gomez sbaglia rigore. He says Gasperini is going to crumble at the most important part of the season. And he says it's one thing to play to entertain people, another to play to win. He says Genoa defender Romero, who is linked to Juve, is better than Palomino, has been the standout defender on Atalanta this season. He says Atalanta are already focused on the Coppa Italia final, and there they'll get help from Limone Inzaghi, Lazio's coach. In Italian, Atalanta Genoa 0-0. Gomez sbaglia rigore, Gasperini crolla sul più bello, un conto è giocare per lo spettacolo, un altro per vincere, Romero meglio di Palomino, testa la Coppa Italia, ci pensa Limone. I'm going to disagree, I'm going to have Atalanta winning, I'm riding them all the way to the Champions League spot. I'm going to have them winning 2-0, goal by Zapata, who's going to be inspired. Most of his goals are away from Bergamo. And I'll give another one to Papu Gomez, who has been playing well. So those are our game picks. Before we get to our first guest, I want to take an opportunity to thank our listeners. On Monday, we did this interview with Gino De Blasio talking about the racism problem in stadiums in Italy. I was really on the fence if doing that conversation altogether because it's really a subject that really deserves a lot of nuance and to be handled the right way. We got great feedback on it. So thank you to Gino. Thank you to all the listeners. So next up, we have someone making his debut on Calcioland, and this is Mark Doyle from Goal.com. I have to say I was incredibly impressed with this interview. I really enjoyed it. We are going to have Mark back coming back on the podcast, the under 21 Euros taking place, and he'll be covering it. And I think you guys, after you hear him today, you're going to be very excited to know that he'll help cover that tournament on the podcast with us. So I am very excited to introduce our next guest. Last time we had our dear friend Carlo Garganese on from Goal. He told me you have to interview this guy, Mark Doyle. So I've had him on my list for a while. So for those of you not familiar with Mark's work, which I've had the pleasure of reading recently, he's a deputy features editor at Goal. He's based in Italy. He defines himself as a professional Irishman living in Italy. He's based in Bologna, one of my favorite cities, and I think one of the underrated cities in Italy, especially if you like eating. So since it's Mark's first interview, we're going to go a little bit around Serie A. So Mark, it's a real pleasure to welcome you for the first time to Calcioland.
Yeah, no, it's an absolute honor to be here. My pleasure. Thank you very much for having me on. I appreciate it.
You got it. So, Mark, I usually, to give background to our listeners, I usually prepare questions for our guests. I always send them ahead of time. But, you know, sometimes, especially if it's a first-time guest, I like to ask them if there's anything they want to talk about that they're passionate about. And Mark right away said he wanted to talk about Atalanta, a team we love discussing on the podcast. So let me ask you two questions on them. So Mark, tell me A, why you wanted to talk about Atalanta, and what has been your favorite thing about them this season?
Yeah, two nice questions. I think they're just an incredibly likable football team. They've been, for as far as I'm concerned, they've been one of the stories of the season. I think they haven't maybe got the mainstream coverage they deserve. I mean, we've all been caught up in the Ajax fairy tale, and also Liverpool pulling off another miracle last night. But I think there are similarities in that Atalanta are a team with a clear identity, a clear idea of what they want to do, of how they want to play the game. And it's an attacking approach to football, which I think is proven this season to be not only like incredibly enjoyable to watch, but also successful as well. And I think in a season maybe where we haven't had that many collective fantastic stories. We've had some wonderful individual stories like Fabio Quagliarella in terms of Serie A. But I think Atalanta are the team of the season as far as I'm concerned because of, you asked me like, what's my favorite thing about them? I think it's their commitment to the game. They have their style and they stick to it. And they're brave, they're bold, they're resilient, just like Ajax and Liverpool. And I think they're worthy of more praise. And I hope that they finish the season in the right way, which would be fingers crossed getting into the top four to reach the Champions League, which would be a phenomenal achievement. And hopefully, I don't want to annoy Lazio fans out there, but I would love to see them win the Coppa Italia as well, because it's what, since 1963 they haven't won that title. So I kind of just feel like they deserve more credit, and I hope they get the actual tangible success they deserve as well for their fantastically adventurous approach to the game.
Yeah, obviously I agree. And, you know, what stands out to me, and you cover a lot, Serie A, this has been a lot of bad stories surrounding the league this season. They have been a constant breath of fresh air on, off the pitch,
exactly.
You name it. So you mentioned, you know, they can have some big objectives to go, gun to the head. What do you think is going to happen? Do you think they will make it to the Champions League? And do you think they'll win the Coppa Italia? And out of the two, which one do you think is more important?
It's a good question. I know that's a debate that rages in every league at the moment. Is Champions League qualification more important than trophies? I think they will win the Coppa. I was extremely impressed. I didn't think they'd finish in top four. I have to be honest, I had my doubts about, because of the fixtures, because of the run-in they had, I wasn't sure they'd hold on to fourth place. But after the performance against Lazio at the weekend, I think they can achieve both. I think Champions League victory could be a game changer for a side like Atalanta, coming from one of the smaller cities, and it would be, the money that it would bring in would be absolutely fantastic for them. So I suppose in that sense, the Champions League is of greater significance and importance to them. But I mean, to win a trophy as well, I'm a bit old school in that regard, but romantic in that regard. I think a winning a trophy for me is what it's all about. You know, having that success, having that victory, having that memory, I think is, you know, a fourth place doesn't quite carry the same romance as far as I'm concerned. So I would love to see them win the Coppa, to be honest.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you. I think my heart says the trophy is more important. My mind thinking more long-term, is this good for them long-term? But, you know, and this is coming from someone that covers transfers. I think we don't do a good enough job of doing carpe diem and enjoying the moment. And if you can win a trophy, I think ultimately that's more important. So let's do the flip side. Obviously, Atalanta is the best story in Serie A. So in your opinion, if you had to pick a team that is the biggest disappointment of the season, who would it be and why?
It's an interesting question because I mean, several teams have been very inconsistent this year. They haven't really delivered. I'm thinking of I thought Fiorentina would be a good shot at European place. They haven't stepped up in that regard. Lazio haven't been as good as last season. Roma have been horribly inconsistent. Milan, despite a brief upswing in following some good January business, have kind of tailed off. We don't know if they're going to get top four. Inter's season has been overshadowed by off field matters with Icardi. When I was thinking about it, I kind of thought the team, I'm not surprised by some of these problems at some of these clubs. And the thing that's kind of, disappointed me has been Juventus. And I realize that might sound strange and seem a bit bizarre for a team that's won the league. But I've been disappointed with how they've played this season. I kind of expect them to really dominate. I kind of expect them to have an added dimension to their play, particularly with Ronaldo there. And he's been good, don't get me wrong. He's delivered. His numbers are good. But they haven't played well. And the thing, if we're looking at it from a purely Serie A perspective, yes, they've won the league. That shouldn't be underestimated, of course. They've been dominant. But I haven't been impressed with it in so many games. I can only maybe think four or five matches in which I've really been in, where you thought, okay, they're playing very well. They look like a really good team. And we can't get away from the fact that Ronaldo was bought and Juventus' business and transfer strategy was all around winning the Champions League. And they haven't done that. And not only were they knocked out of Europe, they were outplayed by a team that kind of it cast them in a very unfavorable light, because Ajax had a clear identity. They were bold, yeah. They were dangerous, they were daring. Like I was talking about with Atalanta, and Juve were none of those things. And that for me was disappointing, because I expected more. And when you talk about those other teams, maybe I didn't expect, or maybe we in general didn't expect them to go to the next level. It would have been a surprise. Whereas Juve have underwhelmed as far as I'm concerned. And, yeah, strange as it may be to say, I kind of find them to have been my most disappointing team of the season in a bizarre way.
Yeah, I agree with you, because Fiorentina is my gut reaction, but I think Juve, I totally agree. And I think, it's not so much the elimination. And look, it's possible that Ajax goes down as a team that we'll talk about to our grandkids, for those that have them, if they go all the way. It's the style of play. And the other thing, too, is I think the fact that they had no serious competition in Serie A makes the title more hollow. That's not their fault, per se. I feel like maybe Sarri's Napoli now is going to get more credit, because at least they were a great antagonist. You already spoke about Ronaldo. He did his part, and I think he did his part in the Champions League, too. Anything else you want to add on his first season in Serie A? And the other thing I want to ask you about Juve, would you make a coaching change there? As it stands now, it really seems that it comes down to Conte or Allegri. There's some buzz on Pep, but that seems a bit far-fetched to me. In your opinion, though, should they move away from Allegri at this point?
It's an awkward one, isn't it? It's difficult, because he's enjoyed so much success. He's won trophies. They nearly won the Champions League. You don't want to be harsh on him. And I remember even Sacchi saying recently, you can't challenge him. However, and there is a but here. It's that they don't play the football you expected. They seem to lack a bit of adventure. They seem to lack a bit of dynamism in Europe when it comes to the crunch, when it comes to the really big games. And like I say, that Ajax defeat, as you say, we could be talking about this Ajax team like we were talking about the Ajax team that conquered Europe in 95 with all these fantastic youngsters. They're definitely an impressive team, and they put out Real Madrid, and they were fantastic in the group stage against Bayern. But they showed up that Juve lacked that kind of that energy, that courage to go and play their own game. And I saw a team, when I saw Juve got knocked out, I saw a team without identity, and that doesn't reflect very well on the manager. So I'm wondering at this stage, and I've spoken to a lot of Juve fans about this, and they kind of feel like, yes, they're very grateful for what Allegri has done, but maybe it's time for a change. And we know this does happen particularly in continental football, more so maybe than England, where you have these longer managerial tenures.
Yeah.
But there's a staleness there. Maybe they need a fresh approach. Maybe they need, someone with new ideas to reinvigorate them. In terms of Ronaldo, I think it's been a good season. He scored. Not only has he scored goals, he's created goals in Serie A. We've seen a slightly different side to him. He's been impressive. And as you said, quite rightly, he delivered in the Champions League 100%. He was the only one who scored a goal for them in the knockout stage. He stepped up. The problem was nobody else did. And I'm looking at that team now, the Juventus team. I think there's a lack of creativity and goals and dynamism in the middle of the park. I think the defence needs to be renewed. And I think up front they haven't quite found the right balance. And if you wanted to be critical of Allegri, he's completely failed to figure out how to insert Dybala into that team, who I find a ridiculously talented footballer, and he's failed to work out how to get the best out of him. So there are legitimate criticisms there, and I would say legitimate concerns there about Juve, about where do we go from here, and we have issues to address. I know, as you said, they're utterly dominant in Serie A, they're way ahead of the rest, but if they want to win Europe, and we know they do, it's an obsession at this stage, no matter what anyone says, they are obsessed with winning Europe, it is the goal. There's going to have to be changes, and it sounds ridiculous. I have a lot of time for Allegri for the job he's done, but you're just wondering, maybe it's the right time for both parties.
Yeah,
the parting of the way. You know, he needs a fresh challenge as well in another country where he'd be welcomed, and you know, he's rightly considered one of the top coaches in the world. Just maybe he's not the coach to win it for Juventus. I don't know.
Yeah, in my opinion, actually, he has a better perception and standing outside of Italy or outside of fans of Serie A. Let's put it that way, the more broadly.
Yeah,
I think he has much bigger cachet with fans of teams in other leagues. So I completely agree with you. And I'm a big Allegri supporter, defender, but I think it's time for both. So I'm with you there. So let's talk about trying to find a way to end this dominance of in Serie A for Juve. Both you and I cover the league, and I think we'd both welcome this, but it's a big challenge. So let me ask you, it seems to me the two teams that are the closest, even looking at the standings, are Inter and Napoli. In your opinion, what can they do this summer to get closer?
A short answer would be to recruit well, which is obviously easier said than done. Napoli in particular are an impressive side, but we've seen this team, we've seen several times this season, they've fallen short in big games. I don't believe they quite have the strength and depth. Also, I'm looking at certain players and I'm looking at the age of certain players and the motivation of certain players, like Alan, for example, was fantastic in the first half of the season, but now does he want out? You know, I'm looking at him thinking maybe his head has been turned by the money and the riches on offer in Paris Saint-Germain. Mertens has had another good year. His numbers are very good as well. I'm wondering how many more seasons he has left in them. So it's a difficult job. That's Ancelotti I've so much time for as well. He's a great coach. I saw De Laurentiis today saying he'd give this season 8 out of 10. And they have been good, and they've done a good job, and they've played well at various times. But they've come up short in the big games when they really need to step up. I mean, they arguably should have eliminated Liverpool in the Champions League, and look where Liverpool have gone from there. With the De Laurentiis, you wonder, he's pulled off some great deals in the past, but is he going to invest the kind of money that they need to really challenge Juve, to really mount a credible challenge over the course of the season? I don't know. Inter, again, I have a little bit more faith, actually, even though Napoli definitely have a more solid football and structure. They have issues with the stadium as well. But I think there's slightly more building blocks in place at Inter. If they were to sign well this summer, and we know Malotta has worked wonders in the past. He was a major role in the reconstruction and the dominance, the reemergence of Juventus. So if he can prove his worth, I've been somewhat underwhelmed by his work so far, but if he can start really putting his stamp on that squad, Inter could potentially, could challenge next season, because there's a little bit more quality there. There's more in place. They seem to be getting the structure that, let's say, that they want slowly but surely. And if they were to bring in someone like Conte, you could see maybe a revival at Inter, maybe akin to what we saw at Juventus in 2011. So, yeah, they're the two outstanding candidates, let's say, to hopefully give us some hope of a title race next year.
I once again agree with you. I know people tell me that I often agree with the guests too much, but I couldn't really say it better. To me, in a lot of ways, Napoli feel like their shot was last year. I think they came as close 100%. As they probably deserved to win and didn't. But I think Inter has more long-term tools to make it happen. Okay, one more question on Serie A. I want to ask you, obviously, you cover the league really well. I always like to ask first-time guest, are there some under-the-radar players, maybe not on the top teams, or maybe not the top names on the top teams that have stood out to you this season?
That's an interesting one. I really like Alessio Cranio. I think he's been the best goalkeeper in the league this season.
Yeah.
And playing obviously for an unfancied side. I don't know how controversial that is, but I think he's made more saves than any other keeper. And it's not just that he's a good shot stopper. I've seen him, he looks very composed, commanding, and he's still only 24. So yeah, I think he's been really impressive, and I'm not surprised. Like, he's involved in the Italy setup now, and I wouldn't be surprised to see him cap soon. He'd certainly deserve it. Lazzari off Spal, I think, is fantastic. I love watching him. He's got like 8 assists already this season. I think he's a guy who could play at a higher level, at a bigger club. So yeah, they'd be the two I'd pick out. Obviously, there's the likes of Zapata, who's has exploded at Atalanta and turned into a player that maybe none of us expected him to be. His strike rate, and he's become so prolific. Whether that's a one-season wonder, I don't know, but he's really impressed me at Atalanta. And maybe Armando Izzo at Torino.
Yeah.
I think he's been contender for Serie A team of the season. I think he's been excellent. And again, in a team that's maybe unfancied and doesn't get as much coverage as they deserve, I think they've put themselves in the mix, or they had at least in the mix for the top four. So I think they did deserve a bit of credit, and I think he deserves a bit of recognition. I think he's been good. I know I've had arguments with Carlo actually a few times about how good he is, and a few other players, but yeah, I think he deserves recognition for his season this year.
Okay, all Calcioland favorites. Okay, so let me ask you two more questions before I let you go, and it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on. So one of the reasons Carlo recommended you is not only obviously you're brilliant, and I think everyone who listened to the interview so far sees it, but you're also going to cover the upcoming under-21 tournament Euro competition. I think there's been really an uptick in talent for Azzurri at every level. I have to say, after 206, for me, there was a huge drop-off, but there are some signs that things are getting better. So tell me a little bit about this particular Azzurri squad, and how do you see them doing in the upcoming tournament? And we can't wait to have you back on to talk about it while it's happening.
Yeah, cheers. It'll be a pleasure. I'm actually really looking forward to it. And it's my turn to agree with you now, because I think one of the most exciting things about this team, this under-21 team, is the fact that they have the potential actually to create a real buzz around the national team again, to restore some of the confidence that was shattered, let's say, by the Azzurri's failure to qualify for Russia 2018. And as you said, when we were 2 or 3 years ago, I think we were all pretty pessimistic about where Italian football was at, and we were looking around going, okay, where are the young guys coming through? There was only 2 or 3 guys here and there, and you were like, are they going to get games? Are they going to play? So my big hope, and with this, this year's Euros being in Italy as well, my big hope is that a team like this, with a squad like this, and we're expecting it to be strong, could show everybody that this is a talented and exciting young crop of players, and could really create a buzz and get some momentum again behind the national team. Particularly on home soil, get some serious support, maybe capture the imagination of everyone here. As I said, the squad should be strong. We don't know exactly the exact makeup, but Di Biagio has already said he has an understanding with Mancini that he's been given the green light to call up the likes of Kane, Pellegrini, Zaniolo. This could be Barella, Cotrone, Orsolini, Locatelli, Mandragora. It's not bad, is it? It's not bad. It's a nice sounding squad, and it could be attacking time. Yeah, I mean, there's quality there, and that's the point. That's why I think it could be this will not be easy. Di Biagio also, fair play to him, he acknowledged, he said this could be the toughest under-21 Euros ever, because the strength of some of the squads. England's squad could be insane. There's so many under-21s actually that England already have in the national team. And then these guys, they have a decision to make. Selke has a decision to make because of the Nations League, of whether to bring the likes of Jadon Sancho or Hudson-Odoi or, you know, all these guys. So, and it's not just England. France have a wonderful crop of players. The Spanish as well, as always. So it could be a really good tournament, and it could be a real really positive tournament for Italy, in terms of showing off that, yes, okay, Italy are not quite back where they were, but they have an exciting crop of young players coming through that it can restore some pride, let's say, that was lost a couple of years ago. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to it, and yeah, it'll be a pleasure to. More than happy to come on the show and talk about it, because I think it could be a really interesting tournament full of quality players and quality matches.
Okay, so since you're going to cover this, I'm not going to ask you this question, but I'll tell you, my biggest reservation about this team might actually be with the coach rather than the players themselves. But you don't have to say anything since you're going to be covering this. So let's close on this. So we also like to talk about pop culture on the show. So I saw you had a tweet on Game of Thrones. So I have to ask you, we're recording this after we have 2 more episodes to go as we're recording this. So tell me, what's your assessment of this season of Game of Thrones so far?
I suppose if we're to continue on the footballing theme, I'd say it's been very entertaining but tactically flawed. a bit like a Zen exam inside. It's been wonderful to watch, but you're kind of going, this makes no sense. This is not sustainable. I don't know. It's for a series that was initially renowned for its characters' cunning and clever strategies. I think we're seeing a lot of stupid decision making of late and stuff that just, yeah, a lot of naive all out attack without any regard for defense or dragons, let's say. And don't get me wrong, I enjoy it. I find it a very entertaining show, but it all feels a bit rushed these days. I feel like they're just desperate to get to the next showdown as quickly as possible, and we've lost a little bit of the cunning and the strategy and some of the elements that made it such a great show and such a compelling show to start.
Mark, I can't thank you enough. I enjoyed this chat a ton. So we're going to catch up again. I know you and I are pressed for time today, because next time I want to talk about your career and get your tips on the writers, but I'm going to save that for the next time. But thanks again. You more than lived up to all the hype Carlo gave you. I really enjoyed this. So I look forward to chatting with you again. And thanks so much for hopping on today.
Not at all. It's an absolute pleasure. It's been a lot of fun. Thank you very much.
Well, you guys talked about Game of Thrones. It's just I am so far behind. But I'm not far behind in looking at these Twitter questions, David. So let's get right to them. David, first Twitter question. What did you make of yesterday's match between Liverpool and Barcelona?
Wow. We got into it with Bruce Grobelaar at the end of the podcast. Alex, you and I are recording this also right after that Spurs-Ajax game. Man, really nothing like the Champions League. So I'll just give you, I have two takes on the Liverpool-Barca. For one, I've been tweeting it all week. It's something that really sticks to me. To me, the margin between winning and losing at this level is so, so slim. And to me, Klopp went from being a fraud to a genius in the span of 90 minutes for a lot of people. Just goes to show how short the span is between winning and losing, yet the gulf that we have and the way we rate someone that wins or loses. Maybe we should take into account that the margin really is so slim ultimately. And the other take that I have is, look, to me, Messi's fantastic. He's amazing. But to me, it's intellectually dishonest to say that had Barca made the final or even won the Champions League, we know the storyline would have been that Messi dragged the terrible Barca with a bad manager all the way to winning the Champions League on his own. But yet if Barca goes out, and this is the second year in a row in really poor fashion, he gets a complete pass. So I think when you're the iconic, with the best player in the world right now, you own it both ways. So I don't think Messi is by any means the biggest reason why Barca lost yesterday. But if you're going to give him all the credit when they win, he has to get some of the blame. He's by no means the only athlete that this applies to. There's a reason why maybe there's some players in the NBA that don't want to play with LeBron anymore, because the same thing happens there. So that's my take on that. Anything that stands out to you, Alex? And I can even ask you about the Ajax one, which was really heartbreaking.
You know, David, as a Chelsea fan, I'm not too happy right now having Liverpool and Tottenham in the Champions League final. And as a side Ajax fan, yeah, it's crushing. It's absolutely crushing. I mean, in this specific Ajax-Tottenham game, sometimes identity you take too far. And when Ajax were up and protecting a 3-0 aggregate, they were still playing their football, which is great and admirable. But sooner or later, you have to, you know, do what you're supposed to do when you're 3-0 up in the aggregate. And especially once it was one more goal for Tottenham, dying embers of the game, Ajax still attacking. So, yeah, that hurts. I mean, it's a terrible way for Ajax to not only end their Champions League run, David, but really end this team, because this team's not sticking together really any longer. I mean, there's going to be a handful of players out the door. So, hopefully Ajax as a club can rebound, but I think we'll always remember this team now as what could have been if they just had, quote unquote, parked the bus a little bit more down the stretch. And well said on Messi and well said on the Liverpool-Barca game. I mean, it's just shocking that Barca couldn't score one goal, because that would have just done so much, because it would have been an away goal. But there's something about this Liverpool team this year that just, there's this energy, and you got to at least commend them. They lost the Champions League final last season, and they're back in it, and that's always hard to do. So I hate giving credit where it's due, but I'll give a little bit. So, David, the next Twitter question segues fairly well. Is Bayern Munich still interested in Matthias de Ligt, who did score and did play pretty well in this game against Spurs? And do you see them as players in Paulo Dybala's sweepstakes if he's sold?
So, on de Ligt, I mean, what a player. I'd be very surprised at this point if he doesn't go to Barcelona. And that doesn't mean that he's turned down Manchester United, Juve, and all. I've had, you know, some people ask me that. Like, I really don't see it that way. We know there's a huge connection between Ajax and Barcelona. Despite what happened against Liverpool, I can't blame anyone for wanting to play there. So I really wouldn't be – I'd be surprised if he doesn't go there. As far as Dybala, I could see Bayern being in the mix for him. They have a really a great relationship with Juve. The clubs have done business in the past. You know, they really need to get a signature player up front, especially. So I could see it. I wouldn't say they'd be the favorites, but I wouldn't rule them out either.
I would love for them to get Paulo Dybala because it would probably not make them go for Callum Hudson-Odoi on Chelsea. And I actually think, I got to be honest, I actually think Paulo Dybala would be a good, really good fit at Bayern Munich.
Yeah.
Ryan Robin, obviously, he's going to be done. And Frank Ribery as well. And Thomas Muller still got a little left in the tank, but they've always used Thomas Muller all over the pitch. And I see the same thing for Paulo Dybala. I could see him filling a variety of roles at Bayern Munich. I think that would be a decent fit, to be honest. So staying on Paulo Dybala, David, what do you make of the rumors linking Dybala to Manchester United?
Shout out to all our listeners in England. Not surprising, this time of year, we talked about Cancelo, Man United on Monday. Ton of new listeners in England. Shout out to you guys. We look forward to having you listen to the podcast throughout the summer. We'll have plenty of transfer rumors, as usual, on the Premier League. So look, there was a lot of buzz on Dybala and Manchester United this week. I definitely see if Dybala is sold, there's really not that many teams that can afford him. Man United's definitely one of them. In the past, Juve wanted 150 million for him. I don't think after this season they'll come close to that, but I definitely, you know, 80 to 100 million, I still think they could fetch that for him. I think, though, when it comes to Dybala, Cancelo, like those types of players, we need to see what happens with the Juve manager. I think, you know, whoever's the manager there is going to want to have a say on what happens with those players. Let's see. I think once that domino happens, we can start figuring out a little bit better which teams could be in the mix for him. Now, I know Man United have said they're not going to invest a lot in the summer and whatnot. I'll believe it when I see it. I think Man United are going to be very active this summer.
And just as a Premier League fan, I don't see why they wouldn't be active. They got a lot of work to do. And also, they need to probably take advantage of maybe some moves Chelsea can't make. Even if Chelsea can make moves, they're just so behind the eight ball in terms of negotiating. So, David, next question. How much of an impact does Manchester United not being in the Champions League have on their ability to sign big names on the market?
So one more thing on Dybala and Man United. I mean, they completed the Pogba deal. They do have a good relationship between the clubs. I think that does help a little bit. I'd be curious to see what Dybala wants to do, to be honest. I wrote about the proposed swap with Icardi on The Athletic. I really don't see him going to Inter for a variety of reasons. I've been doing a lot of research there. So I think if he leaves Juve, it's definitely to be going abroad. But to answer this question, history tells us that being in the Champions League or not for a club like Manchester United, and there are very few that I would say this for, really has little to no bearing. I think even who the manager is, ultimately really doesn't matter. A few years ago, you know, they brought Pogba, Mkhitaryan. They had a great transfer window with no Champions League. I think, you know, when you are a brand like Man United, it elevates the profile of any player to be there. On top of that, they can pay a ton of money. You know, you can be the savior there after a difficult season. So, no, I don't think not being in the Champions League, I really don't see it as a factor at all for Manchester United. The only factor I see it is maybe for a player who's on the fence, who's never been in the Champions League, and he has multiple offers. But that really applies to very few.
Yeah, well said. I think to a lot of players, it's like, yeah, let me be the savior, as you said. Let me be the piece that gets you back in the Champions League. All right, David, next Twitter question. Any transfer reports on Fiorentina defender Milinkovic?
Yeah, he's a player that we talked a lot about in January and last summer. I really like him, but I think a lot of players on Fiorentina this season, because of the really horrible season, took a hit. There's not a lot of buzz for him. Look, this is a player that was linked to Manchester United when Mourinho was there. He's a young defender. Maybe could still be a fit there. He can play as right back and center back. I rate him quite a bit. I personally would love to see him at Napoli. I think he'd be fantastic next to Koulibaly. Also at Roma, if they move on from Manolas, he'd be a really good replacement. Like, not that long ago, Fiorentina wanted $40 million for him. I'm not sure if they'll be able to come close to that after this season, though.
All right, David, next Twitter question. With Antonio Conte rejecting Roma, what are the odds they sign Maurizio Sarri?
Yeah, so much happened, man, Alex, since our last episode Monday. So a lot has happened since then, and Sarri today said he wants to stay at Chelsea. In a second, I want to get your take on how realistic you think that is, that he's the coach next season. From where I'm sitting, I'd be very surprised if he isn't. Conte, in a big interview on Gazzetta dello Sport, essentially closed the door on Roma, saying the timing's not right now. We've talked a lot about it on the podcast. I never really got that. I never thought it was that likely because of his salary demands and Roma's FFP situation. So I don't think it'll be Sarri either. I'm curious to see. I think Roma should go all in for Gasperini, although I'm not sure Atalanta will let him go. Other than that, it's going to be pretty interesting. I think Gianpaolo, the way Sampdoria's season ended, I don't see a lot of appetite for him at a club like Roma. I don't think he'd be that well received. Who knows? Maybe they just stick with Ranieri, who at least has done his part, and he really embraces the situation at Roma.
Yeah, regarding Sarri, it does look especially since Chelsea do have Champions League for next season, which was the main objective for Maurizio Sarri. It definitely does look like Sarri will be back. I'm not sure the transfer ban has too much impact now on if he's going to be back or not, because it does sound like the Court of Arbitration of Sport will freeze it. It's just a matter of when. So I think at this point, he's most likely back. The only wrinkle here, David, and I do hear whispers every once in a while that Chelsea are still not sold on bringing Sarri back. The wrinkle here is, and we talked about this a couple episodes ago, Frank Lampard right now is managing Derby County in the championship. Yeah. Now, Derby County is in the playoff in the championship, and they have a chance to get promoted. If Derby County don't get promoted, there is a chance that Derby County are no longer able to afford Frank Lampard as a manager. So it would be interesting if they can't afford Frank Lampard, do Chelsea just all of a sudden, and once again, I said this a couple episodes ago, do they almost try to make an amicable parting with Maurizio Sarri and try and, while Frank Lampard is free, get their manager for the future? But I doubt it. I think Maurizio Sarri will be back at Chelsea next season, and I do think he has deserved it. I do.
So, yeah, I mean, Alex, had I asked you at the beginning of the season that Chelsea was going to finish in the Champions League spot and make a deep run in the Europa League, you would have signed that as a good season, right? I mean, I know it's been up and down. We talked about the controversy at the top. This has, you know, pretty much everything you and I said on our special podcast on Sarri last summer pretty much happened. But I think it's hard to argue against the results, no?
It's a results-driven business, David, as you know. And yeah, absolutely. When he was appointed manager in August, I literally said, I'm sure I can go back to tweets. I said, I want top four. I want a Champions League spot. And I want a deep run in the Europa League. And look, Chelsea might win the Europa League, and hopefully they can get past at least to the Europa League final, and they have a Champions League spot. So Sarri has literally done the main objective. Like you said, it's been a roller coaster ride. It's been up and down. It's been dysfunctional, but that's classic Chelsea. But it's all about the results, and Sarri has kept to the results in his first season. So that's why I think he has earned another season at Chelsea. So let's stay on managers, David. Would Juventus be better off with Antonio Conte or Max Allegri?
So I'll just talk about the fit, because interestingly, right as we were recording tonight, Di Marzio posted a report that Conte is really close to Inter, and he said aside from a big surprise coming. He will be Inter's manager. Again, if you've been listening to the podcast, we've been saying this all season that this was going to be the likely outcome. And I have to say, I'm really excited because I think it's going to make the league that much more competitive. But let's talk about fit on Juve hypothetically. Now, look, I've defended Allegri all season, but recently after the Ajax match, and especially recently some of the quotes, the things that he's saying, he's really lost the plot. And this is, and I'm saying this after saying that one of the things that I found the most impressive about Allegri was the way he managed the media and communications, and he's completely lost the plot with that. So I'm convinced it's time for Juve to move on. And I got to be honest, after our interview with Pratesi from Gazzetta, I kind of thought, you know, Conte back at Juve isn't that crazy because he really would energize the team. And now he would have the resources to compete in Europe. So maybe it would be a fairy tale. So I kind of would have liked to see that happen. But now it looks like Conte's going to Inter. Again, we're recording this Wednesday night. Very curious to see where that leaves everything because Allegri does have offers from other clubs. Could Juve go for, you know, be curious to see who they would go for. I think, though, another season of Allegri would really have a lot of problems for Juve. And this is coming from someone who likes Allegri and defended him a lot.
Interesting. All right, David, staying on Allegri. Can Allegri evolve and play a more offensive style?
Maybe. I've been thinking a lot about this season. I think the turning point in a bad way was the second group stage of the match when Man United came to Turin and beat Juve. That was actually one of the best matches Juve had all season. And I think Allegri got really scared losing that match. I think he saw Juve put in one of their best performances of the season, lose at home. And I think he, in his mind, he was like, look at the margins in the Champions League especially. There's so much pressure here. And I think he really put the brakes on the team even more than usual. So with Conte on his way to Inter, if he stays at Juve, I think he's going to have to adapt a little bit and maybe show more courage. Am I that convinced he can do that? Maybe not so much. But this, I think, if he stays at Juve, it's going to be really important for President Andrea Agnelli to really encourage him because I do think Allegri does have it in him. We've seen it a few times, but just he held the brakes way too much. And I think it all goes back to that match against Man United.
Okay, next Twitter question, David. Should Milan cash in on Suso?
Absolutely. I think this season, more than ever, we saw that he really lives off these stretches of matches here or there that he does well, and then he disappears for months at a time, even more so than Perisic. I think Perisic is accused that of Inter. I think Suso does it even way more, and I think Perisic is a notch above Suso as a player. Sorry, Milan fans, I really believe that. Suso has that 40 million exit clause. If they can get that, I would drive him to Linate Airport immediately and make that happen. I'm not sure they can fetch that for him, but I really would look to cash in. And this is, you know, coming from someone that believes Milan needs to hold on to all the good players that they have, but I'm just not sure Sir Suso is consistent enough to be a starter for Milan.
All right, David, interesting question here. Is it bad for Serie A if Atalanta qualify for the Champions League and inevitably sell their best players?
I don't know if you remember, Alex, we got a lot of these types of questions last year on Inter and Lazio and what would be better and whatnot. I think the pros of Atalanta going to the Champions League, assuming Gasperini stays, and I think if they go to the Champions League, it's very possible that he stays. I'd love to see it. I also wouldn't assume that Atalanta would sell if they make the Champions League because, A, they're getting a ton of extra revenues because of that. They've sold a lot of players over the years. They're in such great financial shape that they are paying for their stadium, which is going to be owned. They're paying for the renovation. So I wouldn't go on the assumption that it's inevitable they sell players. In addition to that, they have players out like Kessie, as an example, who went on loan with option to buy. They have revenues coming in. I think there's more than Kessie. I don't think he's the only one, but that's an example. That's 20 million right there. So if Milan redeems him or he's sold to another team, they can make some money there. So I wouldn't at all go on this assumption that it's inevitable they sell players. And take it from someone who covers transfers way too much. We need to enjoy teams like Atalanta much more in the moment and not worry so much about what will happen in the future on transfers with them.
Yeah, well said. Very well said. All right. Well, I won't be able to tell you if your next answer is well said because I don't know, David. But the listener wants to know, what do you make of the Game of Thrones season so far?
So again, remember, I've watched every episode, but I'm by no means an expert. There's many times where characters come on and I remember the face. But if you ask me to explain the backstory of that character, I wouldn't even know where to begin, to be honest. But, you know, I really do enjoy the show. I got to say, and this might come off as a really scorching hot take, I have a feeling this last season of Game of Thrones is a little bit similar to the last season of Lost, which really was a disaster. It was really a great journey until the end with Lost. And I know Game of Thrones super fans are going to be really upset by that. But I felt like a lot of the storylines have been rushed. There have been some really puzzling decisions by characters on the show. So I don't know. I think if you're a Game of Thrones fanboy, yeah, nobody's disputing that it's an unbelievable show, that it's a massive hit. I've said it many times. Maybe this is the last really huge TV show where we all experience it at the same time. But there are some clear flaws as well. So before we get to the patron questions, I want to take a moment to thank all our listeners. Please leave reviews on iTunes. They are a big help to help us grow. Please, you know, I really appreciate people listening to the podcast and tweeting the news, the things that I say. I would appreciate even more if you tweeted the link to the podcast. Alex and I put in a lot of work into these podcasts. We do have Patreon, but it is available for free. So we're doing a lot of content like that. We need people to listen as much as possible. So again, I appreciate you tweeting what I say and all, but maybe also tweet the link to the article. And now let's get to our patron questions. Thank you all for your support. If you enjoy my coverage of the transfer window, you should consider becoming a patron because you're going to get a lot more both on the podcast and with articles. So I am very excited for our next guest. Since I was a goalkeeper growing up in Italy, and he was part of my first memories of European football. So we have Bruce Grobelaar, a former Liverpool goalkeeper, legend at the club, with over 400 appearances for the Reds over 13-year span from 1981 to 94. At the club, he won everything. The First Division Premier League titles, 3 FA Cups, 3 Champions League Cup, and the 1983-84 European Cup, which I want to ask him about. He's a native of Zimbabwe, and he's going to be an ambassador for the upcoming Liverpool tour in the United States, which we'll get to in a second. But Bruce, I always like to say it's better to be lucky than good, and I'm very fortunate to have a Liverpool legend on my podcast after what we saw last night. It worked out perfectly. So let's start there. I want to ask you, A, what was your reaction to what we saw with Liverpool accomplished last night? And I want to ask you, as someone who has played there, what is so unique and special about Anfield on a night like that?
David, it's great coming onto your podcast and to all the listeners and to your question. The question is has been asked so many times this morning. Well, my reaction of Liverpool winning last night was utter ecstatic. It was brilliant. It was fantastic. I couldn't even tell you how everybody felt. Did I believe that we could do it? Yes, I did. Before the game, I actually said if we can get a goal before halftime and get a goal just after halftime, they could crumble. And they did. And then right at the very end, they switched off. They switched off like you should never switch off when the ball's out of play. and Trinta Alexander-Arnold and Divo Origi knew this. They added up. He came back and he put the ball through for Divock to actually score. Magnificent. And for me being here in the States to promote the tour, preseason tour of the United States, especially coming to New York and on the 24th of July preseason against Sporting Lisbon, this is immense. A brilliant, brilliant performance by Liverpool Football Club.
So tell me, what's so special about Anfield on a night like that, in your opinion?
Coming to Anfield when you are up and you are think you are safe, you are not. Liverpool and Anfield, you're not coming to a stadium, you're coming to a Liverpool home. And everyone that supports Liverpool in that home are going to be singing, and the noise must have been deafening for Barcelona. They thought that they were home and dry. Yes, they have in their own Nou Camp Stadium 90 to 100,000 people. But 54,000 people in Anfield are much louder, much more passionate. They get behind their team. That is their family. And they're not going to let their family disappoint anybody. We delivered. We delivered on the pitch, in the stadium, worldwide. Liverpool delivered, and they will continue to deliver everywhere that they go.
Absolutely. So now I want to ask you about Liverpool's current keeper, and this is Alisson, who listeners of my podcast are very familiar because he was brilliant at Roma before joining your club. So I want to ask you, A, what do you think about Alisson as a keeper? And I want to ask you, what do you think about this evolution of the role that you were so brilliant at during your career? Like, Alisson is almost an outfield player, like a sweeper that starts so much of the action from the back. So I'd like, you know, when I think of you and I remember your career, and I was a goalkeeper coming up, I think of great saves, your athleticism, but it was just a different position back then. So tell me, what do you think about the evolution of the role and Alisson specifically?
Well, if you have a look at the evolution of goalkeeping, my time, and I still support this, and I am a goalkeeping coach, and my goalkeepers, whoever I coach, I tell them one thing. You're a goalkeeper, catch the ball.
Yeah.
Catch the ball. If you can get two hands to punch it, why can't you catch it? And that is the thing. Once you've got hold of that ball, you're in control. You are the first line of attack. You might be the last line of defense, but make sure when you're at the last line of defense, you catch the ball so you can start that new attack. Alisson has got both. Mm-hmm. I would like to see Alisson catch the ball a lot more. If you can get two hands to the ball, you can catch it. So that's the evolution that I'd like him to transition to as a Liverpool keeper. Other thing, he was brilliant at Roma.
Yeah.
FSG and FSM management allowed Jurgen Klopp to go out and buy this person. Paid a world record price for him. Fortunately for him, that world record price was taken away 1 week later by Chelsea.
And yeah.
That meant that he didn't have to suffer the world record price on a tag on his head. So he was okay. And he has developed and will develop into one of the best goalkeepers in the world. We bought him around when he was around number five in the world. I reckon he's number three in the world now. So he is going to grow, and I believe that he can become the best goalkeeper in the world in the next year or two.
Well said. You know more about this as your role, and you're a coach too, but I totally agree there. So before we talk about Liverpool's U.S. tour, which is going to be three games. You mentioned the one in New York. They're also going to be in Boston at Fenway Park, and they'll be in Indiana, Notre Dame to face Dortmund. I want to ask you a couple of questions on your career. So my first memory of you, I was very young, is when you faced Roma in the European Cup final in the penalty shootout. And I think your flair was very obvious there. So I want to ask you, what do you remember of that penalty shootout. And I want to ask you, how often do people bring up the name Bruno Conti to you?
Well, Bruno Conti was the first penalty taker that I tried to put off. I didn't specifically target everybody because I wanted the internationals to be the ones to be against me in this situation. Bruno Conti was a very good winger, picked the ball up and he came as if he was dancing to the penalty spot.
Yeah.
So I was unsure and I was thinking that he's a little bit cocky. So I thought, well, go on the line and put my hands on my knees and then cross them over and swing my knees back and forth together. Like the old 60s dance. And he looked at me. And then he would step back 2 paces, and I did it exactly the same just before he kicked it. He took 2 paces and blasted the ball over the top of the bar. And I thought to myself, it might work. And then the last one was Graziani.
Yeah, Ciccio Graziani, great player.
Graziani picked the ball up, put his arm around the referee, and I didn't like that, so I went and bit the net. And that's when I came up with the idea of spaghetti leg. The net looks like spaghetti.
Yeah.
And you know when you get hard spaghetti in boiling water, it collapses. It gets soft underneath and then the rest of it. So my legs got soft. I did a little bit of a wiggle. He looked at me and he changed his mind coming up to kick the ball. And he tried to blast the ball and it hit the bar and went over. And that was the catalyst for us to win the European Cup. I was supposed to take the 5th penalty, but because I was running around, the manager told Alan Kennedy to get the ball in the go in goal in the penalty spot to take it. And thank goodness he did, because the whole story would have been different if I had taken the penalty and missed. That's for sure.
Wow, that's incredible! I didn't know that you were scheduled to take the last one. That's tremendous.
That was it. Yeah.
Yeah, so great. No, I have a great memory of that. Last night I watched it again, that penalty shootout, and I got a kick out of it. So the next question I have, and this comes from one of our listeners, because I know your career, but I'm blessed to know a lot of old school Liverpool fans. And there's an urban legend that you may have heard of about you in training with another Liverpool legend, Graham Souness. And again, this is what I was told, so you can tell me if it's true or not. And you supposedly knocked him to the ground, allegedly. And as he got up, he said to you, "I hope you didn't mean that," to which you replied, "If I did mean it, you'd still be on the ground." Is there any truth to this? Maybe, you know, enough time has passed that maybe you can share this or not.
That's true. He was being aggressive to one of the players and keep on kicking him in training. So I went up and fouled him, and he actually said that to me, and I said that back to him. And after that, we had the mutual respect for each other, and we still do today. He became my manager, put me on loan because he didn't like the way that I didn't like the way that he was a boss. From the player to the boss situation. And so he put me on loan many times. He tried to sell me to Chelsea in 1992, and I refused to go. So, you know, we had our issues. But as a person, off the field and out of football, he's one of the nicest gentlemen you ever want to speak to.
Fantastic.
As a manager, he wasn't. And still today, I can tell him, Graham, you were useless as a manager. As a player, he is the best player I've ever played with in my life.
Wow, that's bold. Okay, well, shout out to Tony Kilkenny, our listeners. Thank you for that question. So now let's talk about the Liverpool tour. So I have attended in the past, actually. Liverpool played Roma. It wasn't a penalty shootout of the European Cup, but it was a lot of fun back in the day. And Liverpool is coming back to Fenway Park to face Sevilla on July 21st. They are going to be before that at Notre Dame and Indiana Stadium to face Dortmund on July 19th. And the match I know you're definitely going to be involved with is the one at Yankee Stadium against Sporting on July 24th. So we have a lot of listeners based here in the U.S. We have a lot of Liverpool fans. So tell us a little bit what they can expect if they attend one of these matches.
Well, if they come to any of those three matches, you must understand that a lot of people, a lot of teams come here and they don't bring their full squad. Liverpool have a tendency to bring everybody because under the FSGS, FSM and Liverpool management, we try to bring them the best and all the players. So therefore, you know that you're going to get some the proper first team players playing in this preseason. And, you know, I'm hoping to be involved with the last two games. That's at the Fenway Park on the 21st and the 24th here in New York. And it's just a beautiful place to come to watch. Of course, they're going to FSG, the ownership of both the Boston Red Sox and Liverpool FC. So it is a place that they're going home to. We call Anfield a home. Fenway is another extended home of Liverpool Football Club. And yeah, in New York, we come to the iconic Yankee Stadium to play against Sporting Lisbon on the 24th. And for the New York people, get your tickets. They go on sale tomorrow, the 9th, at 10 o'clock. Get your tickets there.
Absolutely. So listen, I knew a lot about you. Definitely a fantastic and interesting guy. So tell me a little bit what role you're going to play during this tour. I know you'll definitely be at the one at Yankee Stadium. I'd love to meet you at the one at Fenway. But tell me a little bit what your role is in all this.
At the moment, I'm on a role of promoting this tour. If asked by the FSM management and LFC to come on these tour, we are family. We are happy to do it. It's an honor and a privilege to be asked by the management team of both companies here to come and promote this football. And who knows? In the summer, I might be back as even if it's just as a fan. I'll be coming back in some capacity.
Fantastic. So, Bruce, I want to ask you just one more question. I hope you'll indulge me. You know, this is we focus a lot on Italian football here. I grew up as a keeper, so I want to ask you, who's your favorite Italian goalkeeper ever and why?
I thought it was Dino Zoff, but I'm going to give you one that has struck with me all the time, and that is Buffon.
Mm-hmm.
Buffon, for me, is a person of loyalty. And I'm going to tell you why. Because he stayed with Juventus when Juventus were kicked out of the Premier League.
Yeah.
They were dropped down a division. Him and Pirlo were the only people that actually stayed there with Juventus to bring them back up to the Premier League. That shows he is a true legend in loyalty. And that is something that footballers don't have too much about these days. Buffon for me is the finest Italian goalkeeper in the modern era. That is for sure.
I completely agree with you, Bruce. I like to say, it's great that, and he did that right after winning the World Cup when he was at the absolute peak of his career. And to me, that says more about him than anything else. So well said. So Bruce, I can't thank you enough for coming on the podcast. As Bruce mentioned, tickets are going on sale for the match with Sporting Lisbon at Yankee Stadium and the whole tour. As someone who has been at these games, I can tell you it's a lot of fun. Bruce told us we're going to see a lot of the big-name players. Liverpool's on a roll, so you're definitely going to want to catch them. And Bruce, I can't thank you enough for coming on Calcioland. As someone who watched you growing up, playing as a keeper, had someone told me as a young kid that I'd later on in my life interview you to talk about this, my head would have exploded. So thanks again for doing this.
No problem. Grazie. Tanti auguri.
That's the show for today. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much to everyone who sent in a question. As you guys know, we record a lot of these. So if you have another question on Serie A, transfers, TV, music, film, please send it in using the Calcioland hashtag. And if you enjoyed the show, this is a free show available to all. Please leave us a review on iTunes. It takes 2 seconds to leave us a 5-star rating. If you leave a comment, Alex and I read them all. And these testimonials are great because they are from our listeners. They help us attract a bigger audience. And if you like all the content on the Calcio Land podcast, please consider supporting us on Patreon. We have various tiers for you just to listen to an enhanced version of the podcast. We have a tier where you can read a lot of original blogs from me. We'll have Alex once in a while do a video, and I answer a lot of questions there. I think that'll be a lot of fun year-round, and especially during the transfer window. So thank you very much for the support, and we look forward to chatting with you in the next few days.